Even if you are visually impaired, you can see some of the exhibits at the Virginia Historical Society. How? Well, that's the subject of this edition of Discovering Virginia on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean. Andrew Talkoff is the Vice President for Programs at the Virginia Historical Society. Andy, what started you thinking about a tour for the visually impaired?
So the Virginia Historical Society has spent the last few years reimagining pretty much all of its exhibits as part of a major renovation project that we did. And after we reopened our signature exhibit, which is called The Story of Virginia, which covers 16,000 years of Virginia history in about 10,500 square feet, and we opened another exhibit, we have a part of our new exhibit plan is to host a series of special exhibitions. And the first special exhibition we had was an exhibit called Dressing Downton, which was costumes from the award-winning PBS series. We started to see a lot of new people in the Virginia Historical Society, and some of those people had visual impairments, and they were at our institution for the first time. And they were asking what kinds of programming there was for the visually impaired. And although we have educators who will lead specialty tours for all types of people, it occurred to me that the Dressing Downton exhibition, which was an exhibit of clothing that you couldn't touch, and our new installation of The Story of Virginia, where in order to protect all of the objects, they're placed in frames or behind plexiglass, that made it particularly challenging for people who are visually impaired. And I've known Kim since she was 1 year old, and I had read some stories about the work that they were doing at the VCU Virtual Curation Laboratory, and one day I just decided to give them a call and see if they would be willing to partner with us to try to look at ways that we can make our exhibits more accessible to people who are visually impaired, and they were very enthusiastic to do it.
How did you partner with them and agree to what they would do?
So the first question that I had was related to the fact that the Virginia Historical Society is home to more than 8 million manuscripts. So these are letters and diaries, things that even if we reproduced them and they could be handled, would be relatively meaningless to someone who couldn't see them. So, of course, you can transcribe the letter that George Washington wrote telling his stepson that he had accepted command of the Continental Army in 1775, but that doesn't really give you an impression of George Washington's actual hand. So the first thing that I talked with the people at VCU about was trying to produce 3D versions of some of the documents that are in our collection. And so the first thing we did was produced a three-dimensional version of George Washington's signature.
I'm curious because the writing is two-dimensional. It's flat.
That's right.
And how is it made into three-dimensional? In other words, raised type.
Sure. So we gave them a digital image of the original letter, and by using what is essentially computer-aided drawing software, they were able to separate the backing of the paper from the text. So where it was darker, where the writing is, they were able to essentially raise it up like a building in a three-dimensional model. And then when they printed it out, there was a backing, and then there was a raised surface where the actual handwriting was.
Andy Talkoff is the Vice President for Programming at the Virginia Historical Society. What exhibits can be felt?
Well, so we're in the very early stages of this process. And in fact, Kim has been pretty instrumental in helping us figure out what some of our strategies might be. So 3D printing is part of it. Using reproductions of objects is another part of our strategy. And we're sort of working with the folks at VCU and internally and with experts in the field to try to figure out the variety of strategies that we could use to what I hope would be a touch tour, basically, is what we're sort of tentatively calling it, that we would be able to launch later in the year.
Name some specific objects.
Well, so one of the things that we have in the exhibition is a Conestoga wagon, which would have been used to transport goods and people up and down the Shenandoah Valley and westward into places like Kentucky or Tennessee. It's really big, and in general, we don't allow people to touch it. So the people at VCU have been working on producing a scale model of it so that we can give somebody who can't see it, and even people who can, the opportunity to actually touch it and get a sense of its shape, the different parts. Kim here brought today a wheel from our Conestoga wagon that was 3D printed. And so that's one of the things. The other thing we've been trying to work on are a 3D print of Patrick Henry's eyeglasses, which are in our collection. Documents like George Washington letters. And then a number of other things we're working with VCU to identify, you know, what may make the best stops along a tour like that.
You've been mentioning Kim, and she's right here. Kim Drudge has visited the Virginia Historical Society. Kim, you visited some of these exhibits. You are blind. How did you react to some of these?
When I asked if I could touch it, they said no. And I said, well, isn't that awesome? There's nothing for me to see. And then these objects now I can touch, like this one.
You have a key.
A key, yeah. A key.
It looks like an old skeleton key.
Yeah, it's actually the key to doors of Libby Prison, which was a fairly notorious Civil War prison camp here in Richmond.
And Andy just talked about the Conestoga wagon. Kim, you have the wheel of it, the reproduction of the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
Did this make it real for you?
Yes, it actually... I finally felt a wagon wheel of the Conestoga, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Conestoga wagon. And I said, yay, I can finally see it!
What did you say when you touched George Washington's signature?
And I said, this is it, this is it, this is it! And I was jumping up and down like this, like bouncing up and down, literally. I was jumping up and down on the floor like this. Like, I was so excited.
Now, what did you say about the way George Washington wrote his signature, though?
I was like, I told her, I'm like, oh man, it's not, it's lines. I can't read cursive. It's just lines.
So this is another obstacle, right? Is that George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, these
lines,
you know,
and
folks all wrote in cursive, which is sometimes difficult to read, even if you're sighted.
They don't teach cursive anymore.
And a lot of people aren't learning cursive. So, but we were able to at least see where the G was and the W. And I think also we learned by Kim's interaction with the signature that, you know, more definition between the background and the actual signature is probably going to be better for future prototypes that we make. So
now, you will not find this at the Virginia Historical Society, but they made a 3D image of you, Kim.
Thank you. That's so awesome. Like this.
You're seeing something new?
Yeah, this is the first time you've seen the 3D printed you, right?
Oh!
Yeah, and I feel these like little dots right here.
Oh yeah, it must be something about the material. So apparently they 3D print in a variety of materials, which is another thing that we learned in talking with Kim, is that, you know, material does matter. So for instance, a 3D printed wagon wheel is made of this corn-based plastic, right? So even though the actual wagon wheel is made of wood, metal, maybe even some other materials, leather parts, you know, that doesn't come through in a 3D print because it's printed out of all one material. So we're also looking at ways to best be able to represent the important parts of an object. So maybe examples of materials that things are made of. So there are, I mean, the 3D printing is just incredible. Like, every time the folks at VCU show me something they've done, it just gets more and more exciting. But it does have its limits, right, as far as being able to fully interpret the content of a museum exhibit to somebody who's not sighted. So we're looking at all kinds of techniques that hopefully will be able to give people a better experience.
It sounds like the partnership between you at the Virginia Historical Society and the folks at VCU is just at the very beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And it could mean things for museums all over the country.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of other museums have been experimenting with 3D printing, which I guess the technology is significantly older than I would have thought. But, of course, over the last five or so years, the printers have come down in price and come down in size, and so they're much more accessible to people, and so a lot more work is being done on them. But I think that, yeah, we're right at the very beginning of our partnership, but there have been other museums who have produced 3D versions of world-famous paintings by using sort of layering techniques to give people a sense of texture, and they use different textures for different colors, so... You know, I think there's a lot of room for museums to use the technology, because I think that, especially for the visually impaired, I think museums are sort of notoriously not friendly places for people that can't see.
That's what you said at the very beginning, and apparently you, Andy, and the Virginia Historical Society realize that there are several populations that can't take advantage of everything the society has to offer.
Absolutely.
You're at the, as I said, at the beginning of this, if you had your druthers, where's it going? Where would you, what would you like to do? How many more exhibits would you like to render in 3D so that they could be accessible?
Yeah. I think that as we move forward, I think being conscious of the fact that every exhibit should have at least some elements that are accessible to the visually impaired is really important. I also think that as we move forward, we might want to look into programmatic opportunities where I know that the circus does a really good job of bringing people who are visually impaired in before the show opens to interact with staff, you know, clowns, animals, things like that. And I think on a limited basis, we can make our collections a lot more accessible to smaller groups, because everyone, you know, needs to interact with our collection in their own unique way. And so I think that by being conscious of the need, which we now very much are, I think by designing to that need, which will only benefit, I mean, I can't really think of too many things that would benefit someone with a visual impairment that wouldn't benefit everybody, because some people are just tactile learners, you know, and so we're also really excited about the potential. When we first started talking about this, our educators also said, well, you know, for pre-K students, this is also really great, you know, the opportunity to touch more things.
Because they have not learned to read yet.
Because they've not learned to read yet, right. I mean, museums are, you know, very visual places, and they're very didactic places. I mean, you're sort of required. We generally give the information to the public through the written word.
Well, you pointed out something earlier that most museums, not all, but most museums preserve something, and by preserving them, you cannot touch them by definition. By touching them, you would ruin them.
Sure.
And here, perhaps there are some museums that offer things to touch, but you're making it accessible.
Yeah, well, and some things you can touch. I mean, some things you will be able to touch with gloves. You know, not every one of the tens of thousands of people that come to the Historical Society, but again, every group of our audience needs to be taught and made welcome in our environment in a way that's meaningful to them.
Kim, let me come back to you. You have heard what Andy and I have been talking about. What has this meant to you? Has it made it accessible to you?
Yes. When I touch these things, I figure out it's a key. It's a 3D printed version of me. It's a wheel. It's George Washington's hand signature, as somebody told me. If I touch the key, I can see it. But if I don't touch it, somebody has to describe it to me. If somebody describes it to me. I still can't see it, but I can hear what they're saying.
This makes it more real, apparently, from what you're saying.
Yeah, it makes it more real for me to touch it, these three things, especially this one.
The 3D you.
Yeah, the 3D me.
Image of yourself. That was,
yeah, yeah.
I hasten to add they won't do that for you at the Virginia Historical Society, but you were very fortunate in having them do a...
Thank you.
A 3D image for you. That's Thanks. Actually going to be very commonplace in the future when, as you say, Andy, the technologies come down in price. Where you can walk into a corner store now and they can make an image for you.
Yeah, I mean, I was amazed at how easy it was to produce the digital image of, of a person. They actually came back when they did the key. They actually used a stand and I think probably a little bit of better equipment. And it used lasers to scan the key and it turned the key, you know, a little bit each time so that it could get it all the way around. But yeah, I think that, you know, there probably will come a time where we all may have 3D printers in our homes the same way that we all have a computer in our home. But for right now, I mean, it makes modeling, prototyping. We're going to have on April 2nd, we're going to have somebody from a local 3D printing company come to the Historical Society, and he's printing chairs to go along with our most recent exhibition. So little miniature chairs, not full-size chairs. Mm. But he said that a lot of his business is based on people who have inventions that they want to try to prototype. So it's really making the cost of being experimental, you know, much lower, and I've seen stories where people are 3D printing homes. You know, I mean, so who knows what's going to happen in the future and what this technology will offer? It's pretty exciting.
Now, you have not been talking in the abstract. These exhibits are available at this moment at the Virginia Historical Society.
Our exhibits are available, and you know, anyone can come and see our exhibitions. They're open daily from 10 to 5 at our headquarters on the Boulevard here in Richmond. One of the things, we're still sort of developing our touch tour programs, so those aren't available yet, but we'll certainly let you know when they are. But groups of people can come. And our expert, very knowledgeable educators will custom develop a program that would be very meaningful to anybody. And they're very skilled at adapting their delivery technique to whatever the audience is they're talking to.
Now, you have already answered the next question, but I want to emphasize it. Again, tell where the Virginia Historical Society is and the hours.
Sure. So the Virginia Historical Society is located at 428 North Boulevard, Richmond, and we're open daily. Our exhibit galleries and our shop are open daily from 10 to 5. We have a research library for those of your listeners who are looking to do historical research. We have an amazing collection, as I said, more than 8 million manuscripts, plus tens of thousands of rare books, all focused on the whole history of Virginia. Our research library is open Monday through Saturday, 10 to 5. Our website is www.vahistorical.org, and we offer a very wide variety of programs that I think a lot of your audience members would be interested in. One of the things I'll mention is that we have a very successful, very popular program of lectures. It's called the Banner Lecture Series. We usually do two a month. They're at noon on Thursdays, but for typically noon on Thursdays. But for your audience, one thing they might be interested in is every one of those lectures with some very well-known and some not very well-known authors of books about primarily Virginia history. They're all available online through our website. So there are hundreds of lectures about Virginia history that make for great audio. We have both a YouTube channel or where they exist, or I guess it's a Vimeo channel, and but there are also podcasts on iTunes that they can download. So.
Is there an admission to the Virginia Historical Society
No.
fee?
No, our main exhibits are free to everybody. We have, as I said, a special exhibition program. Right now, the exhibit that we're hosting is called The Art of Seating, 200 Years of American Design. That'll be on display till April 17th. And those special exhibitions are, there's a fee to visit those, but they are free to our members. So we always encourage people to become part of the Historical Society family and not only help us do the work that we're doing, like what we've been talking about today with our educational programs, but there are also wonderful benefits for being a member of the Historical Society.
Andrew Talkoff is the Vice President for Programs at the Virginia Historical Society. Kim Grudge, who is visually impaired, has been advising Andy by testing some of these exhibits. Thank you both.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You're listening to Discovering Virginia on the Virginia Voice. And for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean.